All you have to know is he's a big, heavy animal and looks at you as a piece of food. You better be moving in the other direction. Paul, give us your call letters one more time and go ahead with your comment. KQRAW, my name is Dick.
Very good, Dick. This is Whiskey Victor 2 Uniform. Look, if my signal is really too rough, I can skip it. It's not a nothing that I'm sure you guys haven't already reached a conclusion on. But, you know, unfortunately, all people know is that science is not perfect, and mistakes have been made in, you know, as far as evaluating health issues and damage to health. And I think what everybody is reacting to is matters of faith more than any, you know, anything logical. And there's just no way you can beat belief. I mean, you know, this is not a rational decision on these people's part. They just know one thing, that science is not perfect and mistakes have been made, especially, you know, now over a long time, many things that, you know, were originally accepted have proven to be dangerous at one level or another. So I think what everybody's doing is just taking it as a matter of faith that, you know, unless this is somehow, you know, very obviously critical. And you brought up many good points indicating how critical it really is, you know, for safety and communications and so forth. But a lot of these people are not seeing that as critical as the belief in the risk they might see that it somehow could be dangerous. WB2U, back to KQRIW.
Very fine, Paul. Most people in Seaford, they know which side of the bread is buttered. You're absolutely right. The only thing that can get rid of false beliefs and emotional responses and irrational thinking, in my opinion, the only thing that can get rid of that is education. And to educate, to re-educate a person where they've got a phony belief, you have to admit to yourself ahead of time that you're going to be discouraged at first. It's going to happen slowly. We're asking for a sea change in thinking. And if you hear a attitude expressed by your fellow townspeople, your village people, and you hear it 5 times a day for 50 days, it becomes a truth even though it's not a truth. You hear it enough, you believe it. And it becomes kind of a mob rule type thing. We have to slowly educate these people. Have to slowly educate everyone that nothing is perfect. You would like science to be perfect. Right, we look at some of these. Let me drop. Occasionally we'll see a Hollywood movie of a guy with thick glasses and a white coat in a laboratory. He's doing science, and you assume that everything he does, as long as he does it right, is perfect. Nothing is perfect, no matter how carefully you do it. What you call science is an evolving body of knowledge that's collected for the benefit of mankind. Today's truth is in science is a hell of a lot better than yesterday's truth. But in most cases, it's not quite as good as the truth we're going to derive tomorrow. It's an evolving body. Nothing is perfect. Certainly our politics are not perfect. Our movies are not perfect. Our science is not perfect. Our teachers are not perfect. Nothing is perfect. If you're smart enough, you work on making an improvement, and you accept that. You change what you can change, and you accept what you can't change. Education is required. We, the one person per 500 in the general population who have the truth, per se, of what radio is, how beneficial it is, and how very small is the true harm it has that can be confirmed in any real laboratory. That's a truth that we have. Let me drop. And we, the one in 500 in the population who have that truth, have to slowly start educating the 499 per 500 in the population, the 99.6 or whatever it is, percent in the population, who do not have that truth. They're going on emotional information delivered to them in a fervent, emotional manner, and because they hear it so often, they believe it. Where's the proof? Where's the beef? Even on that crazy rule in Europe where you can't have a 9-year-old child use a cell phone. What the hell is it based on? If you say that there's very little disadvantage of doing it, and it's being ultra-conservative, and it's in the right direction, I'd sort of accept that. But that's going on a belief. It's not a measurement. It's not reality. Anybody else need further comments? Give me your call letters. How do we educate the 499 per 500? That's what we've got to do. We've got the smarts in this area, and they don't have it. And they're suffering huge disadvantages, a hell of a lot of mental anguish, a tremendous amount of money and time is going to be wasted doing nothing. It's not even busy work. It's just aggravation. Why the hell does anybody want to go down a road that promises 99% probability of cost and aggravation and mental anguish? Why do we want to go down that road? With education, we wouldn't come close to going down that road. K2RIW, who wants to make the comment?
I'll tell you how it began in Europe.
After the beep, tell us.
There was a published in one of the medical boards of the UK that one of the neurosurgeons says he has seen a rise in tumors, brain tumors, since the oncoming of cellular phones and people that have a tendency to use it quite a bit a day. And in fact, he was able to say that when he found a tumor in a person's brain, he would know which way the cell phone, in other words, which were they using it on their left hand or their right hand use of the cell phone. Did you ever hear that one, Dick? Over.
I may not have heard that one, but there's a problem here, Mel. There's a slim chance that it's anecdotal. Let's assume that cell phones have been around since 1990, 1995, in any real frequency. The pharmaceuticals that those physicians have been prescribing for people since 1990 is extremely significant. We got a massive amount of the population on statin drugs, things that are supposedly going to lower cholesterol. We got a hell of a lot of other healthy pharmaceuticals. There's all kinds of things going on with the bottled water and the leaching of the plastic. There's a hell of a lot of things that have changed in the last 15 years. For me to say that the cell phone is the causative agent is a good sounding hypothesis. Where's the beef? Where's the measurement? He believes it to be true, and he can selectively say, look at those 5 patients I had. They hold the cell phone on the right-hand side of the head, and 3 of the 5 patients have the tumor on the right side of the head. Aha, that's the cause. Good-sounding hypothesis. Was it really objectively gathered data, real statistically gathered data, I can't think of the right words, but you know what I mean. There's a slim chance that there's some truth to it, but there's so darn many other causative agents. You've got to be extremely careful to blame it on this particular one that happens to be my hobby horse of thinking today. Back to you on that one, Mel. K2RIW.
Exactly. Well, this is where the basis of that lore came into being, that no child under 9 years old is allowed to use a cell phone in public. If you are spotted with you usually giving your cell phone to your child, you're liable for a summons. So where did that was it. I remember seeing that report that this was a noted neurosurgeon that he brought that up in one of their prestigious medical magazines that printed in the UK. I forgot the name of it. And it was taken extremely serious. He didn't say, I think. I said, I saw a rise. I believe that's the way it exactly was phrased. I saw an increase in tumors, brain tumors, that seem to be on the rise. And it seems to be more prevalent, maybe with people that are using cell phones, and the tumor where it's located seems to look like you say. I've had 5 patients, and 3 of the tumors, I may use the cell phone on the right side.
That's all it takes, Dick. It's so easy, you know, to create panic in human beings. You've seen, I remember a movie that they wrote that, in fact, included a ham radio operator where it, from outer space they isolated an area of a town or something, levitated it into space, and the town literally went crazy, blaming one another as aliens, and the aliens are sitting on their spaceship there laughing about it. It shows that it didn't take much. It was an experiment to see how easy they could stampede, you know, humankind on this earth, and we actually become our own worst enemy. So it doesn't surprise me. In fact, let me let it drop.
Yeah, by the way, Rod Serling had a movie like that one. Go ahead.
So you know the movie, yeah, the Rod Serling movie. That's it. Okay. I used to love those movies, those half-hour shows, of course, Rod Serling used to put on. And around the corner here, they put cell antennas on the apartment building here, a few blocks over from me here. It's the only apartment building in the whole neighborhood here, and because it's only zoned here for one-family houses. This was built way, way back in the 20s. The only one here in the area. And when they put those cell antennas on there, they had a number of people that demanded they be let out of their lease. And in fact, some of the apartments already had been gone co-op. They were basically turning the building into a co-op, apartment by apartment, as they became, you know, available. And a number of them, they sued and wanting their money back or lease broken or whatever it is. And believe it or not, it went through, Dick. Over.
There's at least two major factors to consider here, Mel. Number one is causative agent. And number two is going to be real percentages. I'll show you what I mean by this now. When it comes to potential causative agents, his hypothesis is the cell phone is causing these extra brain tumors on the specific side of the head where the person uses the cell phone. There's a hell of a lot of birth control that have been used. There's a whole lot of hormone replacement therapy. A hell of a lot of people are on Lipitor. A lot of people are using bottled water. All kinds of things that we've done in the last 15 years, along with cell phones. And of all the potential causative agents, and there's a huge number, I just named a couple. And we've changed the way we create the purity of our foods, and we've changed the additives to our food. We've changed many of the chemistries that we use for fertilizing our fields and whatever. All kinds of things have been changing simultaneously. And they drop. So even if he really has seen an increase in the number of brain tumors among people using cell phones, and he thinks that's the causative agent, and it's extremely difficult to find people who are not using cell phones today. So you don't have a control. If you had enough control, if you had a whole class of people who don't use cell phones, yeah, the Mennonites and the Amish don't use cell phones, but their lifestyle is so different in so many other ways, you can't use them as a control. So finding control in the population that eats the same food, uses the same pharmaceuticals, but just doesn't use a cell phone, very difficult, but possible. You got to do that. But even if there is this increase, he as a physician is seeing the worst of society, just like the guy in law enforcement. He's seeing the worst. He's called to all the crime scenes. Let me drop. Because he's called into 5 crime scenes in a month, he could make the assumption that everybody is committing crime. Well, this physician is seeing a certain number of brain tumors. Is it 5 per 100,000 in the population? And without the cell phone, would it be 3 per 100,000 in the population? And there are people who will take that situation of 5 in the population versus 3 in the population, and they'll say, aha, there's a 75% increase in the amount of, there's a 75% chance more that you're going to get a brain tumor if you use a cell phone. That's crazy mathematics. Even if this vulnerability that was created by all these other causative agents, and now the cell phone on top of it just happens to kick those cells over and 3 people per, or 5 people per 100,000 get this particular malady, is that enough justification to remove all the cell phones from that town? No way in hell. I could make a case that I've saved five people per thousand in a 1 year period by using the cell phone, and you're worrying about not having five brain tumors per 100,000 by eliminating cell phones. You can't support the mathematics of being the right risk-benefit ratio, even if it was true. But I'm not convinced it's true. For this physician to really do an objective study of that particular published report, he published a report that made him popular. The journal who published it published something that was in demand. You got one of these situations where a supply and demand situation. He became popular, the journal became popular, you think everybody's happy. But now you got to dig into the specifics. I don't accept the hypothesis. This is such a large number of causative agents. There are ways of pinning it down if you use enough statistics. I'm not convinced that he did that. I'm a little bit disappointed that the journal didn't ask those questions. He might not have been able to publish that in Lancet or Science Magazine, the American Association for the Advancement of Science. They do a very good peer review before they let you publish something. And very little bad stuff gets into that journal. I wonder what journal was that published in. Maybe it was published in a good journal. But was it advertised as a hypothesis based on these assumptions? Well, quite possibly he was emotionally involved, and he said, this is fact. And people believe it. Has it been confirmed? Is it just one report? What do you think, Mel? Is it just one report? Or have we seen this effect in five countries of 10 different populations, if you know what I mean? K2KEY, K2RIW.
K2FYJ with another comment.
Okay. Harry, and then Mel in that order. Go ahead, Harry.
I have seen a similar study that said young people shouldn't be using cell phones because of the danger of the radiation from the phone. And then the gentleman who was making the statement demonstrated his complete lack of understanding of radio in the first place, because he followed it up by saying, rather than using the cell phone next to their ear, they should use a Bluetooth attachment on their ear. And that way the cell phone is no longer near their head, completely ignoring the fact that Bluetooth is radio emission as well. So some of these comments that come from these people are coming from pure lack of understanding of anything, and it's pure emotional rhetoric.
You make a good point, Harry, but there's one step more. We dig a little bit deeper. That cell phone, in many cases, puts out close to 1 watt of power, because in the worst case, it's trying to communicate with a cell site 6 miles away, in the worst case. Now, as we establish more and more cell sites, it's coming more into the 3 mile category, I think, in that neighborhood. So the cell phone, a watt, long range requirement, high data rate is what we want these days. That Bluetooth thing hanging in your ear is transmitting low speed audio data that has to go 5 feet, so to speak, between your ear and the rest of the cell phone that's hanging somewhere else on your body. He's running milliwatts, maybe fractions of a milliwatt of average power compared to the almost watt of the cell phone in the worst case. So the thing in your ear, although it's a little bit closer to the ear canal, another, you know, quarter inch closer, is radiating a hell of a lot less power, running on a tiny little portable battery that's also hanging in your ear. That's very short range, very low data rate communication. So even if the cell phone was a danger, the Bluetooth would give you, let me pick a number, almost 30 decibels of improvement in risk factor just because of the watts of radiation. I've rounded off the numbers, but I think you see where I'm going. KC2FYJ, K2RIW.
I agree that the wattage from a Bluetooth is less, but it begs the question, if RF is dangerous, then RF is dangerous. And here's someone trying to have it both ways. I also point out that the cell phone tends to be to your ear only while you're having a conversation, but people who have Bluetooth on their ear tend to leave them there all day long, whether they're on the phone or not. So, cumulative effect, see where I'm going. KC2FYJ, back to net.
Oh, Harry. Now we got to dig one bit further. Assume you're the designer of that Bluetooth device. You've got a tiny little battery, and you don't want the battery to go dead in 1 hour. What do? You do sniffing and sampling and sleeping. That Bluetooth device is not transmitting when the cell phone is not active. He wakes up once every second. I don't know the exact numbers, but he wakes up once every second for a millisecond and says, is the cell phone talking to me? If not, he goes back to sleep. He's got to save battery power. Although you're wearing it for the full eight-hour day, it's only on the air 1 millisecond out of each second, and it's radiating a milliwatt of power when it does it because it's trying to save its battery. So even though you're wearing it for a long time, it is not continuously active. Over to you, Harry.
Well, that depends on the design of the individual unit. There are some that seem to last a lot longer than others, and those are probably using smarter technology. But the point is, it doesn't really matter, because all it takes is the one mutation to start the problem. And that can be caused by a watt, it can be caused by a milliwatt, it could be caused by a kilowatt, or it could be caused by none of the above, and nobody's been able to prove it one way or the other definitively. If they had, then all of this conversation would be moot.
Okay, the possibility is that you just expressed an opinion, Harry, that might not be real. I could be really pessimistic and say that every RF dose is an overdose. All RF is bad. Well, you got to be quantified. A kilowatt is a hell of a lot worse than a watt. It's a hell of a lot worse than a milliwatt. I can expose you to a watt of energy from the cell phone that you use, and that's pretty safe. In theory, I could use the exact same frequency. I could take a chunk of ham or beef. I could take a chunk of beef that's approximately the size of your head, put it in my microwave oven at the exact same frequency. I bathe it now with 750 watts in this closed cavity, and I create pure heating effect. We call it nuking our food, but that's just a joke. Pure heating effect, and now I am cooking the food. I am changing the food chemically because I have created a much greater magnitude of RF exposure to the food. So you can't just say that all RF is bad and that there's the same likelihood of creating a cancer with a kilowatt versus a milliwatt. I don't accept that. Almost everything in life has a quasi-linear scale to it. There's a kind of deterministic characteristic. If there even is a detrimental effect, let me drop. If there is a detrimental effect of RF, a higher amount of RF is going to be more detrimental. A same amount of RF for a longer time, in many cases, not all cases, is going to be more detrimental. But you've got to be careful here. Let's jump over to that really nasty word, nuclear. Nuclear radiation really means that the nucleus of this atom decays spontaneously, spits out an extremely high velocity alpha particle that when it strikes your body does damage. That's what nuclear radiation is. I got some uranium in my hand, I hold it in my hand for a long period of time, and the particles being given off there microscopically are doing damage to the DNA because each individual particle has an amount of energy. The photon of energy coming out of that nuclear decay when it strikes my cell could potentially do damage. And if I get 1 millirem of exposure today and 1 millirem of exposure tomorrow, I have gone to a little bit less than 2 millirems because the body does some repair overnight, 2 millirems of exposure. But now I go to non-ionizing radiation, RF energy. Let me drop. RF energy, each individual photon coming out of that transmitter, is way too low in energy to have anywhere near the effect, the ability to change the DNA spontaneously on one of your cells. It can't do that. The energy is way too low. Only when you get a zillion of those photons coming out of that microwave oven, they all get together and do some heating, but they don't have the energy to directly damage your DNA. If I give you 1 milliwatt per square centimeter of exposure of RF energy today, and 1 milliwatt of exposure per square centimeter tomorrow, your total accumulated dose is 1 milliwatt per square centimeter. And I add the time, but I don't add the dose in magnitude. It doesn't accumulate. RF is very different. It has way too much lowness of energy of each individual particle. That's why nuclear is so nasty. Each individual particle can do damage. Each individual particle of RF can't do anything. It takes a zillion of them even to sense it with the antenna of your supersensitive receiver. It takes a more than a zillion of them in that microwave oven to start cooking your food. You see where I'm going with that one, Harry? KC2FYJ, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Oh, absolutely, and I don't disagree with any of that. I wasn't trying to suggest that a microwatt or a milliwatt was just as deadly as a kilowatt or a megawatt. I was just being somewhat over-expressive. The point I was trying to drive at was the damage is going to happen when some threshold gets crossed, and it could be a milliwatt that crossed that threshold, or it could be a watt, or it could be a kilowatt. On the other hand, you made a very, very telling point when you mentioned the difference between atomic radiation and radio radiation, and that is the ionizing nature of it. It's the ionizing radiation that's the dangerous stuff. And radio radiation is not ionizing, as you indicated, which is orders, not just an order, but many orders of magnitude different in terms of its potential deleterious effect. KC2FYJ, back to net.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that, Harry. So, it's a kind of a cause-effect magnitude, and you got to use slightly different mathematics, so to speak, with ionizing radiation versus non-ionizing. The biggest problem we've got as radio people is a vocabulary problem. That general population, the 499 per 500 people who are not informed about radio, can hang on that word radiation, that emotional word. I sure wish way back in the early days we called it RF transmitting, RF signaling, call it anything else. In those days, since the signal was spread out in all directions, by dictionary definition, it does radiate. After World War II, when we found out about nuclear radiation, and also what particles of ionizing stuff comes out of a nuclear event, and it also radiates in all directions. So they have a similarity in that they radiate, but it's not even apples and oranges when we're talking about radiation of one versus radiation of the other. It's an emotional response to a word that's being falsely associated with an entirely different branch of physics, even though they're both radiation. It's education. A educated public wouldn't behave this way. We have the knowledge to slowly, painfully educate that 499 people out of 500. We're going to have to do that. We can sit back and say, I don't give a darn. Let me drop. We can sit back and say, I don't give a darn. And we're going to watch a tremendous amount of anguish, money spent, emotional attitude spent, time spent, that will all signify almost nothing. Bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. It's an extremely false premise in the beginning. To keep using the false premise and building upon it.
Ready.
Say again?
Get off your horse.
All right. I made my point. Mel, you wanted to say something else. Go ahead, Mel. And then we're going to go to Eric in that order. You got it, Mel.
Okay, I'll make it brief, Eric. So you get off your horse. All right. Let me put it this way. Let me just cite one, two things that are in real quick. Dick, do you remember the DEW system up in Canada? Over.
DEW stands for Distant Early Warning, which eventually became DMUs, Ballistic Missile Early Warning System. No, never heard of it. Go ahead, Mel.
If you and I, you know, would remember things like that. There were a number of cases where they used to, I remember they wrote this up in newspapers and all, where people that worked up there in this very cold climate would stand in front of the antenna of the DEW system and feel, oh boy, that is, feels good. The radiation from the system there, that high-powered antenna system, said that it warmed the body when you stood in front of it. And then later on, they told you about how they all died of some diseases like leukemia or whatever. Do you remember that factor, over?
Yeah, we got to be careful now. There are a number of crazy stories that were not based in fact, but they sounded good, and nobody bothered verifying them. Without a doubt, there were some people on the distant early warning line. These are megawatt radars, 120-foot dish, looking over the North Pole, trying to detect any missile that's launched toward the United States. This is a huge expenditure, great big defensive system. And yes, these people are in the Arctic, in very cold environment. If you stand in the right place, you will get some RF energy into your body, and you will feel warmer, particularly if you stand close to the feed on. And to really choose the right spot to stand without really disturbing the performance of the radar and making people unhappy is another whole thing to be investigated. But let's assume that the person did do it. Let me drop. The way that 400 megacycle approximately energy, they were using frequencies that low because they really wanted over-the-horizon radar. You don't use the super high frequencies. The lower ones you use, the more you look. So they're using the super low frequencies, and the good news is you can generate a lot of power down there, and it looks over the horizon, and it goes by way of ionosphere and ground wave and a whole lot of modes of propagation that give you very long range of the radar. Therefore, you get a lot of forewarning time that a missile has been launched, and you start measuring the Doppler shift in the location, and you figure out what the flight path is going to be, and is it a real risk, and so on. That low frequency, that high of power, sort of like a microwave oven, you put a whole human being in front of that. Assuming the guy could get into the right spot to get enough power to really feel the heat. Now the depth of penetration of that lower frequency is multiple centimeters into his body. There are portions of your body inside of your stomach and whatever that do not have temperature sensing because it wasn't required. You've got a whole bunch of temperature sensors on your fingers because it's required for survival. Temperature sensing in your stomach, which is always running at 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, unless you're running a temperature, is not required. So you can be heating up internal organs to a degree that creates all kinds of crazy damage by cooking, among other effects, and you might not sense it. The eye damage you can get from that can be significant. The gonad damage you can get from that can be significant. So if you really did it, and you weren't damaging the performance of the radar in the process, yes, I will accept the fact that under that extreme condition, you can create bodily harm. But that is I wish I knew the exact number of megawatts, but that is a huge amount of megawatts. As I said before, everything is magnitude sensitive. The milliwatt is nowhere near as...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
The milliwatt is nowhere near as damaging as that gigawatt. The peak envelope power out of that radar was well into the gigawatt power. And under the worst case condition, if you could really get there and if the story was real, I believe you could do damage. But can a normal person in American science society today come anywhere near that? Wow, I kind of doubt it. Back to you, Mel, KQRIW.
I'll say the final word, but they blamed it on radio radiation. They didn't say heat. See? It was heating, maybe, like you say. You're heating the internal organs, like a big microwave oven that they were standing in, whatever. But they didn't say that. They said that the damage to them was being done by the radio waves. I mean, I remember that article. I think it was even in QST and all. Most likely that's where I saw it, one of the amateur radio magazines. Okay, my final comment is I remember a bulletin that I saw. Now, I'll show you. Motorola was supplying a lot of the radios to the police department. And they said they recommend, I remember they had a picture of a police officer, you know, in uniform, you know, like a sketch. and they showed that, you know, with the extension mic, with the antenna on the end of it, that the distance that it should, you know, the microphone with the antenna on it, and especially you can most likely 99% of the time using it on just receive the walkie-talkie, but they showed that recommended safe distance of the antenna from his head, how to put, where to place the mic antenna, Dick, over.
Yep. Motorola has been sued a whole lot of times, and a few people have won their case, saying that they were damaged by Motorola equipment, particularly in broadcast centers like Empire State Building, among others. But they, a court of law decided that there was enough evidence that the person had been damaged by the radio exposure in a place like Empire State Building, a person doing maintenance. Can a handy talkie under normal usage do it? If I took a 450 megacycle or 800 megacycle handy talkie, and if I pressed the rubber duck against my closed eyelid and transmitted 5 watts out of that thing and transmitted key down for 5 solid minutes, without a doubt, the total amount of heating of the cornea of my eye probably can do damage by thermal effect. So I could misuse a handy talkie in that way. A xenon flashlight used by a child under the covers reading a comic book, and he decides to start experimenting. Let me drop. And he decides to hold that xenon flashlight right up against his closed eye, and he sees that pink effect of the light coming through his eyelid. And that's putting down quite a few watts of power, nicely focused. And he holds that flashlight there for 6 solid minutes during some kind of an experiment. He can damage the cornea of his eye by thermal effect with a flashlight. There are people who have stood in front of the glowing embers of a fireplace where the bricks are really hot and glowing, if you know what I mean, and they do this day after day, and they develop cataracts. So there are things that you do to the extreme which can definitely create damage. But under normal circumstances, because the eye has a thermal time constant of 6 minutes, and you don't make transmissions for more than a few seconds at a time under normal use, because it's a very busy channel, a very vital channel, and they don't want you rag-chewing on it. So under normal use, realistically, can a person using a law enforcement Motorola radio damage his body? Almost impossible. But now, to be super conservative, Motorola can say, these are our rules, these are our recommendations. You didn't follow those recommendations. You've got a lawsuit against us, but there's the recommendations. You didn't follow it. We're innocent. You can see what's going here. The legal beagles have come up with those rules. That wasn't based on a laboratory measurement. That was based on a legal judgment, in my opinion. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, what I'm saying, see, there's how these things begin. Again, now based on legality rather than science. This is basically the answer, Dick. So you're never going to convince, if you have to go up against one of those lawyers, that, and you make that statement about holding the antenna against the eye, nobody in their right mind is going to do these things or whatever, they still will say to you, you should have warned them not to have that antenna 2 inches away. It should have been 6 inches away. This is the bottom line. You see, you're going up against people, like you say, know little or nothing about the science, but are very good in the practice of legality. So this is a hard thing, and this is what's taking, we're coming full circle. This is most likely what's taking place for the most part in Fayetteville. It's what he said, she said, they said over there, and, you know, and it's just like any legend or anything like that, it gets enhanced as it's repeated from one person to another. And there's the basis. You better pick up Eric because he's after us. I think he's the sheriff. He's going to shoot us both.
Yeah, he's got a bigger gun than we do. Eric, straighten us out on all this. You work with some very high-power RF equipment. There must have been, over the years of the broadcast industry, somebody claiming that they were damaged, creating a lawsuit, and maybe a few of those people collected. Maybe you know of some of those cases. Maybe you want to tell us about it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Yeah. This is a recurring theme for you. There have been the stories about the ADIZ and 40 megawatt three-dimensional radars at arrays, and there was a story that somebody was working on the antenna and somebody accidentally turned it on. The guy wound up with blood clots and clogged up his coronary artery in the end. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But in the broadcast world, somebody did a study in the 70s, and there seemed to have been a high incidence of certain kinds of cancers, and they tried to make a correlation between transmitter engineers and cancer. And it's neither here nor there. But, you know, the reality is that, as you say, you know, the word radiation is the killer. But, you know, we also have this thing called radioactive, except most people don't realize that there's, you know, different level energies of particles that are being shot out. We call them ionizing radiation because it will ionize another atom. But in essence, we've found that, you know, you shoot a neutron into a string of DNA, it will change. It will actually bump a molecule out of place or out of sequence, and you get a mutation. The body normally takes care of it, but if you do that enough over enough area, you're going to have a real problem because the body can only fix so much at one time. But anyway, yeah, you know, this is just I just wanted to slow you down a little bit because you sound like you're somebody who's a representative of the cell phone company. Ah.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Yeah, all right, I blew it. For the gentleman that was talking about Bluetooth, it doesn't matter who's Bluetooth. It's not there's different methods. Bluetooth has a very precise protocol in the way it communicates. And anybody's Bluetooth device, in order for it to be universal, has to follow that protocol precisely. Bluetooth actually only send out an acknowledge when pulsed by the cell phone or whatever the emanating device for the Bluetooth is. And by the way, most people think their cell phones aren't transmitting when they're not using it. And that's not quite true either. Cell phones transmit a burst, depending upon which system it is, anywhere from 500 milliseconds to 3 seconds. Because it's always, you know, talking through the command channel on the cell phone system. It's only a burst of data, but it's still transmitting, but it's not continuous. Back to you, Dick, K2RW, K2J.
We get on the subject of radio frequency biohazard, maybe once every month or so, Eric. It is an extremely hot subject with the general public. It's a moderately hot subject with ham radio operators. Each time we get on the subject, the total amount of enthusiasm that's expressed to continue discussing it is such that if I look back at the records recorded on KC2NJI's website, on the cases where we've gone way beyond normal hours, quite often it was on that particular subject. It is a hot subject. And, from one point of view, it looks like we're riding the same hobby horse. Well, there's many different ways of expressing this data. And it's an educational problem, and education is required. I wish I could say I have never worked for a cell phone company. I've worked for a company that got bought by a company that supplies cell phone hardware. So I can't claim complete innocence. But I've never worked on cell phones. I really have no possible remuneration capability for defending cell phones. It's just that I am convinced that a cell phone is an extremely safe item that everyone should own for safety reasons. And obviously, I don't practice what I preach. I don't have one. I got all kinds of other radios in my car, and I think I don't need one. But I don't have one, and the people who try to call me on a cell phone get very unhappy that they can't do that. Let me drop. And if somebody wants to really give me grief, they can say, well, this guy thinks that they're super safe, but he doesn't have one. He must not think they're safe. I'm giving you the specifics. And by the way, although I may be expressing this as if it's I'm speaking ex cathedra, as if I'm speaking from some scientific organization that really knows. Take any of the words that I've said, and maybe even the words that Mel has said and other people have said, and weigh them. Don't take them as the absolute truth. If you have the slightest bit of doubt, check a little bit further. I'm giving you some firmly felt opinions based on 40 years of exposure of high-power radio equipment. I've had 40 years of exposure from a design engineer point of view. Some of the highest power radio transmitters that have ever been put on an Air Force airplane, I've worked on them for 10 years. Some of the highest power transmitters ever put on a Navy airplane, I've worked on them for 10 years, and so on. So I've had a lot of exposure, and I mean that both from a radio exposure point of view, as well as exposure to the technology from an engineer's point of view. And on a significant number of occasions, I've made a declaration at the request of my supervisors, is this situation safe? This person is deciding to do this particular experiment. He's going to stand in front of the leading edge of a B-1 airplane while this particular transmitter is turned on doing this particular function. Is he safe? That exact question has been asked to me among many other like it. So I'm the guy who has, on a few occasions, been asked to give, I wouldn't call it testimony, but give quasi-professional opinion as to, conclusion can I be called a radio frequency biohazard expert. I'm not. I'm telling you a whole lot of opinions based on a whole lot of exposure and a whole lot of experience. And bear in mind, these are opinions, formally felt. Sometimes I say it with great passion. But consider the source. Weigh the data before you go and make a great big decision on it, if you know what I mean. I wonder if... how many cell phone companies have you worked for, Mel? K2KEY, K2LAW?
None, but I've had exposure, like you say, to a lot of RF over the years and all, both aircraft radios, you name it, radar, everything. Amateur radio, plenty of high-powered, you know, kilowatt amplifiers, everything from HF right up to your kilowatt amplifier, and I'm going to blame you for my problems, Dick, and that's why I'm not feeling well. It was your amplifier that did it, and look for my attorney, Dick, over.
Yeah, that sounds pretty serious. Yeah, that silly little 3-pound amplifier, if you really make 2 or 3 mistakes in cascade, it can get you in a lot of trouble. The fact that it's so small and light and so potent, got 20 decibels of gain, and under certain circumstances, well above 1,000 watts of power output in that little 3-pound package. I can melt a piece of RG8U coax cable with the 432 energy that comes out. When I say melt, I poured that energy for 10 minutes through a piece of RG8 coax cable, and the polyethylene dielectric inside got so hot that the RG8 cable acted like a wet noodle, a fat wet noodle. It became extremely pliable. And if I had a sharp bend in that piece of RG8 when I did that, it would only be a matter of time before the semiconductor would slowly drift through the almost melted polyethylene and eventually make contact to the outer jacket. So I built a transmitter that is almost capable of burning up a piece of RG8U cable without high viswire in the cable. So can that do damage if you put that into a very small antenna that's very close to you? You take that exact amount of power, put it into a 28-foot diameter dish with 30 decibels of gain, and stand directly in front of that dish. You're safe. Put that amount of power into a simple little corner reflector or a dipole and stand a few inches away from it. You're not safe. That 28-foot dish and the feed horn is smearing the power across the 125 square feet of area, and the watts per square centimeter goes down so low that standing directly in front of that antenna is safe. So the high-gain antenna is safe, and the low-gain antenna is not safe. Of course, that's opposite of common sense. That's the way RF biohazard works in that particular...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
In that particular arena. Okay, we've probably been on this subject more than long enough, and Eric has made that clear. I guess we should go back to normal subject. Let me give one more call to Paul, although I think we're way beyond his bedtime, and he wasn't available earlier. Paul, WS2M, you happen to be available, K2RIW?
WS2M?
Yeah, I called you earlier, Paul, and I probably got you at just the instant that you were away from the rig. Go right ahead, and is there another launch going to take place? How soon? And are there really just two launches of the space shuttle left? Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, there is. That's the plan, number two. There is talk about bringing another one a couple of months after that, but there's no money allocated for it. So, yeah, you got this one, November 30th, which is delayed many, many days now. The following shuttle would be in February, probably mid-February or something like that, and that would be it. So, yeah, that's about all you're going to get. So we'll see how this one goes. They've got some cracks in the external tank. There's some brackets and things like that. They found a crack in, so they're going to have to change things out. And cracks in the foam, and, you know, that's an old story. But once they get that ironed out, maybe they'll have a shot for the end of the month.
I think you said you had either a question or a space report. Anything else you're going to tell us before I ask you that specific question?
Yeah, I had just a brief report anyway dealing with this. Just the space shuttle. Yeah, I mean, if you follow the International Space Station program along, they do have a spacewalk coming up. There's six people on board. They'll be doing our spacewalk on Monday. Now, you don't need the space shuttle up there to do that. They've done this many, many times before. And this time, the Russians are involved with that spacewalk. They'll be using their exit way from the Russian module to get outside the space station instead of using the Quest lab. That's the American Quest module. That's the American airlock, you might call it. It's quite bigger than they normally use. The Russians will be going out and doing some prep work. They need to set it up. They do have a future module coming up that they'd like to get ready for. They change insulation in the area. They put cameras up, different antennas, and all of that. They're going to do that on Monday when we drop it. They have interesting spacesuits anyway. You know, our spacesuits, you climb into, toss into the legs and you get in there first, and then you put this torso part on top and attach it like that, then the helmet. They have a spacesuit where they open up the back of the spacesuit. It's like, you know, it looks like one big assembled piece. They open up the back and they climb in, put their feet in first, and then they put their body into it, and it's like a big door behind it, behind them, and it closes. And they have a very nice spacesuit design. So they'll be doing that on Monday, and we'll follow that on the internet. They will have live coverage. So that's pretty much it, Dick. A couple of science topics dealing with the Hubble Space Telescope. They've taken some nice pictures of galaxies very far away. It looks like beginning our work on mapping out where dark matter is throughout the universe. Got a couple of pictures of that on NASA.gov. But we'll leave that for another time, I guess. Back to you, Dick. WS2N. Stand by one. I meant to tell Mel out there, get better. He's done it before. I know he'll do it again. And congratulations on that award to you there, Dick. Back to that.
Hi, thank you, Paul. When it comes to dark matter, one of the biggest mysteries in the world of science, cosmology, astronomy, whatever, dark matter and dark energy. The fact that only a couple of percent of what you see is the real stuff, and 90-some-odd percent of what you don't see is the real universe. And I'm guessing that Hubble maybe was using some gravity lensing effects to see that there really is a lot more mass there on that galaxy than appears to be. And the February 27th launch, which maybe is going to be delayed, is going to contain this brand new thing called the AMS, Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer. Something like 15,000 pounds, 15,000 pounds of magnet is on that thing, in order for it to make an extremely high energy cosmic ray telescope. Mother Nature is giving you bursts of energy out there every so often, and the cosmic rays are the highest energy particles that we ever see. Let me drop. So some of those events out there that we've never investigated are emitting, radiating tremendous strength cosmic rays in this very potent cosmic ray telescope, AMS. Is going to start measuring the magnitude and the direction of arrival of those super potent cosmic rays. This is a whole portion of the spectrum that's never really been looked at before. We've looked at far infrared, near infrared, optical, ultraviolet, X-ray, and so on. We've looked at a lot of the spectrum. We haven't looked at, as you keep going higher and higher in frequency, you eventually get up to cosmic rays. And that's almost the end. You wait and see. Somebody's going to find a shorter wavelength, higher energy thing yet than cosmic rays, but this thing is going to see, it's going to operate for a couple of years, 3 years I think it is, and it's going to really measure the magnitude and direction of arrival of these super potent cosmic rays. Whatever cosmic ray detectors we've had in the past were down below the atmosphere where they get a very distorted image in energy and direction of arrival and what particle it was, and so this is above the horizon looking at a brand new part of the spectrum, you could say, and they have reason to believe they're going to see a lot more effects of dark energy and dark matter and get a little more of the knowledge that's required to figure out what in the world is going on. But you know darn well it's going to create more questions. They're predicting that ahead of time. So you Google the word AMS put NASA, and you go to that website, and you see that beautiful piece of hardware that's being constructed. It's finished, and it's just about ready for launch, and it will be ready in February. It's going to see things that have never been seen before. Unfortunately, the pictures it makes, let me drop.
Hey, Dick, a definition on cosmic rays?
Yeah, go ahead. Give me a definition on cosmic rays.
Okay, I was going to ask you your opinion about it. You know, you're going up and up in frequency. Is this, you know, is that similar to what you're saying earlier between the, you know, with the cell towers, you know, RF and compared to nuclear? You know, you got to watch that. When you get into the different forms of, you know, the frequencies all, that do not make it to Earth, you run out of space, and, you know, that's why they use all the different equipment up there for millimeter waves and all of that. Is the cosmic ray really a frequency of RF, or is it, you know, what would be plasma flying through outer space, ions?
John, good question, Paul. If I start at the optical spectrum and go down in frequency to near infrared, far infrared, sub-millimeter wave radio, millimeter wave radio, centimeter wave radio, all the way down to meter radio, you keep going lower and lower in frequency. Everything from the middle of optical down has less and less energy per photon. It's less and less ionizing. As you go up in frequency from optical, the first thing you see is a near ultraviolet, far ultraviolet. I think it's called ultraviolet A and B, but you know what I mean. When you get into the far ultraviolet, you're now got enough energy to be ionizing. Those are the rays that give you sunburn. Those are the rays that start doing damage. You go higher in frequency, which is shorter in wavelength and far ultraviolet, you start getting into near soft X-rays and hard X-rays. You go higher in frequency yet, we call it cosmic rays. There's a continuous spectrum there. Cosmic rays really are, well, let's put it back, let's go back now. When we talk about the energy per photon, and as they go higher and higher in frequency, each individual photon, the smallest particle that can come out of that transmitter, so to speak. Let me drop. The smallest particle, as you go higher and higher frequencies, got more and more energy. And you know that there's a duality. Is a light wave a photon particle, or is there a photon wave? The answer is yes.